On this week's Josh Nason's Punch Out, we talked to somebody who I've wanted to chat with for quite some time, that being J.D. Drake. That's right, J.D. Drake of AEW Indies, PWG Evolve. He's been all over the place. J.D. and I talked for nearly an hour. We just got to gabbing about all kinds of stuff. We talked about kind of his career, what he thinks it's been to this point, his AEW run so far. Is he happy with it? Satisfied? Not so happy? We chat about that. Anthony Henry, his workhorseman tag team partner, getting back in the mix as well. And his being open up about mental health, body stigmas, fans saying stupid things at shows. We talk about all that stuff and more, including some really cool stories about the life of an indie wrestler. He works about 70 to 75 matches, give or take, a year. And there's a travel story, which is crazy, which we discuss. What happens when you have to cancel out of bookings? What's that feeling like? And then also a little bit about his WWE tryout as well. So all that and more. This week's Josh Nason's Punch Out. Myself, J.D. Drake, for almost an hour. Enjoy. So my guest this week, he's been a pro for 20 plus years in the business. You've seen him everywhere and somewhere, from PWG to Evolve to NXT to GCW, New Japan Strong to your local indie. Most recently, he's doing the work in AEW, where he and Anthony Henry are going to take on the Varsity Blondes on Monday's episode of Dark Elevation. I welcome J.D. Drake, a.k.a. the God of Bowling, to the show. Jake?
I don't know about the God of Bowling, but I mean, I'm okay at it.
Yeah, average of 221, I hear, correct?
Well, right now, yeah. It's the first 4 or 5 weeks have been really good, too. I can't argue.
That's good. So you play in a league then, I take it?
I bowl 3 leagues a week, yes. I bowl Mondays, Wednesdays when I'm not at work, and I bowl on Thursdays as well.
Nice, nice, nice. Now, are you seen as a local celebrity of sorts on your team? You just one of the fellas?
It depends on where I go. Everybody treats me like I'm just one of the dudes. So it's not a big deal, but there's some wrestling fans that bowl with me and we'll always talk wrestling, but they don't pry. They don't try to get inside information, nothing like that. They're just as cool as they can be, man.
That's good.
So I can't argue. I've been around bowling probably longer than I've been around wrestling. So everybody knows me.
Oh, no kidding. So you've been playing leagues that long or just kind of started?
I have.
Yeah.
Nice. I started league bowling when I was 9.
Yep.
So, yeah, I've grown up in bowling.
Nice, nice. So maybe a career after wrestling wraps up, you could move to the PBA or whatever. You never know.
I don't know about the PBA, but I do ball work and things like that. Like I drill bowling balls, like sell different equipment to different people and make suggestions and things like that. Now,
no kidding. So, wow.
I do.
That's awesome. That's cool. When I say you talk about being bowling for so long, we'll flip to wrestling. And I say you've been in this business for like, you know, 2+ decades. What goes through your head when you hear that? I mean, that's a long time in this business.
It used to be like you were ancient when you've been in it 20 years. But now, I mean, way back then I kept getting told, you're not going to figure out what you're doing for 10 years. The first 10 years is going to be trial and error. Then you're going to figure out, oh, this is what you're really supposed to be doing. And then your career is going to take off. Well, that's just about how it happened. It took, I started in 02. It took me 15 years to actually get a break.
Yeah.
2017, I believe, was my big breakout year. And people started taking notice. So now it's like, well, Christopher Daniels is 51 and he's doing it.
Yeah.
And there's other guys in it that's well into their mid to late 40s, early 50s. You know, there's some guys that wrestle in Japan and Mexico that are almost 60 or into their 60s. So who knows? I might have another 20 years left in me.
You never know. It's with the wonders of modern medicine and taking care of yourself and all that. You never know. Yeah.
Who are you telling?
That's right.
Medicine and surgeries and things like that have, like, when I first tore my ACL when I was 18 or 19, surgery now, surgery then is like, it's way different. I was on the shelf 9 months when I had my surgery. Now you get an ACL surgery, you're back in 10 weeks.
It's crazy.
It's wild.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. One of the reasons I've wanted to talk to you for a long time, I got to tell you, you're one of the most, to me, and I think a lot of other people, one of the most underrated and overlooked wrestlers in the business today. I've got a chance to see you live a lot of times for Limitless Wrestling, about an hour away from here in beautiful Yarmouth, Maine, which you've been plenty of times before and heading back there.
Yes, sir, I have.
And what I'm really impressed with is the fact that, you know, how you adapt to different styles is tremendous. I've seen you in so many different matches there against different variety of opponents, high flyers, more technical guys, everything in between. You've just evolved so much again, 20 years. How are you feeling about your career as a whole at this point? How you kind of have come to this point in your life?
Well, if it ends tomorrow, I feel like I've left it better than I found it. Mm-hmm. That's all I've ever wanted to do. Like, I'm living a dream that five-year-old me looked at his grandmother and said, you know what, this is what I want to do when I get older. If I can't play professional baseball, I want to be a wrestler. And she told me, well, as outlandish as it is, you can do it. Well, I'm doing it. But I feel like when I first started training, I was 220, 225, and I trained as a cruiserweight.
No kidding.
The old WCW cruiserweight division was 225 and below, but hell, I was the biggest man in my class. Like, and at 225, I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff, like a lot dumber ass bumps than what I take now. hell, I used a 450 as a finish for years.
No kidding. Wow.
I did. The last one I hit, I believe I was 255 pounds.
Wow.
And I hit it clean. And then I got in training and hit one clean on a crash pad, and then I got up there and for some reason my brain locked up and said, you're not doing this anymore, and I'm not doing it anymore. I guess it was after the knee and ankle injury. But learning to work with the smaller guys during training for so many years prepared me to be able to like keep up with the smaller guys and be able to work with the smaller guys and the more technical guys. My technical wrestling was okay, but it didn't get to the point to where I could really keep up with guys until I started doing jiu-jitsu, and then it all kind of fell into place. But hell, I train people now. So we started doing lucha in 2002, was it? No, 2012. No. Let me think. Lyle Case, Super Law, out of North Carolina, started watching lucha a long time ago. And I believe it was between 05, 06. He said, hey, the business is going to go this way.
Yeah.
We called bullshit. I was like, this is not going to, nobody's going to do this crazy shit. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Sure enough, it started going that way. So we kind of learned just from watching, so to speak, and we learned lucha that way. But then I started doing seminars and things like that with Quackenbush and Skyda and Hollow Wicked and working more guys like that and learned lucha. So I can base for damn near anything. There's not a style that I can't adapt to. If you want to fight, we can fight. If you want to wrestle, we can wrestle. If you want to fly, I'll stand there and let you fly, and I'll slap you when you hit the ground. That's just me.
Yeah.
My career's been a whole lot of ups and downs, twists and turns.
You mentioned Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Do you no-gi, gi? Where do you rank? Or what are you doing there?
I was doing both. I had gotten up to 3-stripe white belt in the system that I was training in North Carolina. But the coach, Coach Brandon Beach, he was real, real strict on his rankings and his protocols.
Yeah.
His 3-stripe white belts a lot of times was other systems, 2 and 3-stripe blue.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went into competitions, you was ready. The one competition that I competed in no-gi novice super heavyweight, I was 259 at super heavyweight. That's the lightest man in my division.
Wow.
I won gold in no gi. I won silver in gi. And it was a whole new world. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. Went through some tough times with an ex-wife and a divorce and got out of it and never could really get back into it. Injuries and everything else kept me away from it.
Yeah.
I've kicked tires about going back into it last year, but I've never committed to it. Really need to. But the school that I would want to go to is an hour and a half away from my house.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's I did the BJJ for almost 3 years. I was a Henzo Gracie blue belt here in New Hampshire. And you're right. Once you get out of it, it's hard to get back in because it's a commitment, right? You can't just once a week and expect if you really want to get good at it, and especially you're trying to get to competition level, it takes a commitment to do it. And it's, you know, they call it the gentle martial art, but it's hard, man. You know it.
It's hard. Nothing gentle about it. There's nothing gentle about it. I got my ass beat.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're talking about. I got my ass beat. But coach was also like Division II champion collegiate wrestler, and at 230 pounds, when he got inside control, he felt like a house.
Yeah.
So you got your ass beat a bunch.
That's right. That's right. It's maintaining or how they position weight and leverage. It's the ones that know. I mean, my professor was like, I mean, a lot shorter than I am, a lot smaller, but he felt like 500 pounds. He could do whatever he wanted to, and just that quiet confidence. And that's what, you know, when people get in bar fights or street fights, you never know who you're going to go up against. That's why it's, you know, just be cool out there. Be cool. You know what I mean?
100%.
One thing I appreciate as well is about you is you're fearless, especially when it comes to social media and so on. And even in indie shows I've seen you at, you know, fans say stupid shit. You will stop for a second during a match and will call them out on it. I've seen you do that in person before. You're vocal on Twitter about an incident at PWG involving a transgender person that was assaulted at a show. Have you always had that confidence to speak your mind, or has that just kind of evolved as you've kind of evolved as a human being?
So I've always had the attitude of, you know what, some of that shit's just not right.
Yeah.
But growing up where I grew up, in the South, Bible thumping Christian area, if you were gay or trans or you were different at all, even if you dated outside of your race, sometimes you were looked at as like just not, just the family didn't want anything to do with you hardly. And I can honestly say that a lot of times I have homosexual humans in my family. Mm-hmm. I love them with all my heart. There's never looked at them any type of way other than your family. We bleed the same. You're a human just like I am. And I can talk shit to you, but best not nobody else. So seeing their struggles and seeing cousins of mine who have intergender babies who are not interracial babies, mm-hmm. who are just some of the best humans and most beautiful humans on the planet, seeing the struggles that they've went through they've really formed my views and my opinions on things like that. Now, I do not put up with bigotry in wrestling at all. It's for everybody. Absolutely for everybody. Like if I hear it during a match, I'm not afraid. You've seen it. I'm not afraid to stop and call somebody out.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to stop and say, hey, you wanted your 5 minutes of fame. Go ahead and have it because you're not going to like what's coming afterwards. There's no reason. There's no reason behind it. Now, when I was younger, I'd said and done some stupid shit. But in 2002, times were not the same as they were now.
Right.
Some of the insults and jabs that you could take and shoot at people, they didn't sting like they do now. But I was just ignorant. I didn't know much any better. Hell, even my family, when we would throw jabs back and forth, they never got offended by it. So I never knew any better. The older I've gotten, the more sensitive I've become to issues that way. I have a son who's openly pansexual. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most vocal humans you'll ever meet, ever. He's bigger than I am, 6'3", 6'4", probably 330 pounds, but he's the laziest human that I've ever seen in my life. But he, I was like, God blessed you at all this size. You don't use it, but I digress.
Yeah.
He honestly has probably been my biggest motivation for changing views on a lot of different things when it comes to the LGBTQ community and like, you know, race, basically, I don't want to say not existing, but like being colorblind to the people that you keep as friends, but maintaining sensitivity to their issues. Like, I know that my African-American friends, I know that they fight a different battle than I do. Mm-hmm. I know they do. I know they go through struggles that I'm never going to go through because I'm a white Southern redneck. And growing up where I did, you were always taught or tried to be taught by your elders that, you know, everybody was equal. It took a very long time to figure out that while we are, we're not.
Right. Yep, I hear you. On a related note, so you've been also very open about mental health and also your body as well.
Yes.
I've been very proud of you getting to better physical conditions, so on, and you've been sharing pictures. And obviously when you go out there, you know, the world sees you as you are, right? And this has happened to so many other wrestlers and things like that. You know, I've always wanted to ask you this. I feel like there's always a stigma attached to being a big man, right? Everyone's like, oh, hey, big guy, big man, all this stuff. And they look at you and they assume a certain thing, right? And that you don't fit the certain stereotype. Not even in just wrestling, but just in life in general. Do you feel like, has that been something you've had to kind of fight through your whole life with that? Just that constant assumption from other people, like, just because you're big, you must be this, you know, this or this or this. Or even in wrestling, that you can't work the style you do. Have you kind of have to deal with that with your career and your life?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. No matter the sport, no matter what I've done in life, it all comes back to, you don't look like you should be doing that. Who cares? Who cares? Perfect example. Wrestling for New Japan Strong in Charlotte. Me and Anthony Henry are wrestling Kushida and Ren Narita, having a great tag match. Well, one of my friends is sitting in the crowd and overhears somebody in the crowd with me in the ring talking about, hey, fat boy, are you ever going to do anything? God, this guy sucks. Get him out of the ring. Yada, 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 yada. Mm-hmm. 10 seconds later, I go to the top and hit a moonsault. Holy shit, he did a flip. He's the coolest guy here. What?
Yeah.
So never mind the fact that I can get in the ring and wrestle and keep up with guys that's half my size. I'm not cool until I can do a flip. Just because I can do a moonsault? There's guys that are 300 pounds that can't get off their feet. There's guys that's 300 pounds that get in the ring and 30 seconds later are blown to bits. I just had a 25-minute match with Kyle Hawk at an independent show in North Carolina where we went. You've seen me go 20-plus with Garcia at Limits.
Yep.
I've went. How long did I go with Alec Price on New Year's Day? That was a 22-minute match.
Yeah.
And we did not slow down.
Right.
So people look at me and they're like, oh, this guy can't go. They look at other guys like Big Damo. Big Damo is one of the best big men to ever walk God's green earth when it comes to professional wrestling. I mean, other big guys, Big Beef, he can really go.
He can.
Keith Lee. Keith is a huge fella. He can go. The work that Ace Romero has put in when it comes to professional wrestling, look at it, man. He was 500 pounds at one point, probably more than 500 pounds. And he has put in so much work and gotten into such good shape that guys half or even a third of his size probably couldn't keep up with him in the gym if he decided to go in. So stereotypes are huge. They look at you, they immediately think something. They immediately think, oh, you're old, you're fat, you can't move, you're broken down. Why are you in here? Yada, yada, yada. They feel like that abs win fights. If that's the case, Roy Nelson wouldn't be a bad motherfucker.
Right.
It drives me insane. And to be honest, it's caused, when I was younger, it caused body dysmorphia pretty bad.
Yeah.
To the point to where I finally just said, you know what, just to hell with it. I'm going to be this way the rest of my life anyway. And I quit giving a damn about my fitness, about health, about all of that good stuff. That's where I got up to 325 pounds and was like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Now, I've been as small lately as 269. I'm back up to between 295 and 300, depending on the day. But it's a different 295 to 300 this go round.
Yeah.
If you go watch the match that I had with Eddie Kingston, my debut in AEW Dark, and you look at me now, I'm not the same guy.
Yeah, physically different. Yeah, I know what you mean. How do in kind of a related note, I don't know if this is related. You have different gear. I've noticed that you have some stuff in AEW where you've had kind of the double singlets. You've wore trunks before, different stuff. How do you determine what to wear, where you wear? Is it a case of just how you feel that day, the different promotion? How does that work with you?
When I wake up and decide what I want to wear.
That easy.
When I walk into the locker room and, I walk into the locker room and it's, I packed this today. My blue workhorseman gear is, me and Anthony are teaming today. Got you. So it's just, if I'm in there with another big guy and I'm a heel and the big guy has high-waisted trunks and similar gear to what I have, I'll wear the singlet. Because, I mean, I don't want to match him, basically. Yeah. I don't want them to look at us and say, well, they could be a team rather than opponents. But if they go in and they look good and I'm supposed to be a heel and they're cut up and I'll put my trunks on, and when I go out there, somebody can call me fat. Easy way to get heat.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Speaking of fans.
My body is mine. My body is mine. I'm going to enjoy it whether you guys do or not.
That's true. The ladies enjoyed, I'm sure. That's true, right?
the one at home does, and that's right. The one that matters.
All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop, you want to watch a soccer game, you want to watch a baseball game, you want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific, and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020, and we're now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free. Completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W. Huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. I want to ask about fans, because you brought up fans a couple times. We've talked about, the one time, Limitless. I mean, you give it to the fans in Limitless and obviously other places. You mentioned the fan New Japan. It's one thing that I've never understood about going to shows is why fans feel like they can say certain things outside kind of the normal wrestling boo cheer type stuff. You know what I mean? You've mentioned you've heard it before. I don't understand fans why they think they can do that, especially like it doesn't make a difference if it's big or small, but like in a small venue, it just seems to be that they're just trying to get themselves attention and over. And that to me from the outside has always been like disrespectful to people working in there, like be part of it, but don't try to take away from it. You've worked hundreds and hundreds of matches all over the place. Is that, what do you think about that?
You just said it. And you asked me the question and answered the question while asking the question. That's pretty impressive. If you ever been to a comedy show?
Yes.
You ever been to a comedy show and like the comedian has a joke. he's setting the joke up so well. Like, he's going in, he's telling this big long story. He gets right at the punchline, and somebody in the crowd decides to give their punchline, which they think is funnier than the one the comedian's going to give. Yeah, there is your analogy.
There you go.
That's the same thing. And they get a pop from a few people sitting around them, and they think it's funny. And the comedian looks out at them like, why in the hell am I here? Mm-hmm. If you're going to make your own jokes and things like, why am I here? Why am I here? And then instead of giving the punchline to the joke they set up, now they have to roast your ass for about 5 minutes just to get the crowd back on their side. So I feel like when fans show up to professional wrestling events, they feel like they paid their money. They came in, they supported you by putting money in your pocket because they paid their admission. So they should be able to do or say what they want. And in all actuality, if I came into your job, let's say that I've used this at shows derogatory, and it's not, well, not derogatory, but to get heat with the crowd.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. Let's say I come to McDonald's and you're working behind the counter, and I walk in, I buy food, I give you money. Now, once I give you this money, I've supported you by putting money in your pocket and paying your paycheck by patronizing your business. Now, do I have the right to sit there and say, why are you being so slow, you fat piece of shit? Hurry up and get me my food. No wonder it takes so long for you to get this food because you're fat, out of shape, you can't bend over and tie your shoes, fucking pathetic, you're trash at what you do. I don't have that right. So why do you feel like you have that right when you come into a professional wrestling show to voice an opinion that may be derogatory or insulting to somebody that's in the ring putting their lives on the line for your entertainment? This doesn't make sense to me.
I agree. Let's. You mentioned your AEW debut. Let's go back. February 2021, you make your debut.
Yes, sir.
You make your debut against Eddie Kingston on Dark. About, you know, 5 minute match. Again, limited fans because we're in that era. You got the call a few days' notice. You're coming up on almost 2 years with AEW, almost 50 matches in both singles and tag team match. How do you look at your AEW run so far? How would you evaluate? Are you satisfied with it? Do you want more? Tell me how you're kind of feeling almost 2 years into this with AEW.
Well, I'm never satisfied, ever. I feel like myself and Anthony Henry are one of the best tag teams you still haven't seen yet. You give us the opportunity and we become a household name. That's just end of discussion, period.
Agreed.
But to say that I'm disappointed with my run would be the furthest thing from the truth. I am living a dream that I shouldn't be, like, I should have never had the opportunity to live, especially according to what others have told me in other companies, in other places. I wasn't fit to compete for them. Yeah. Hold my beer and watch. It's been the time of my life. Like, literally, 5-year-old me is thoroughly excited that I get to wrestle on television and be known by, God, fans all over the world and work with guys like Arn Anderson and Jake Roberts, Dustin Rhodes, Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, Dean Malenko, Jerry Lynn. The list goes on and on and on. The guys that I used to watch when I was a kid, they're now my coworkers. How can I be upset about that? Would I have liked to have won more matches in my time? Well, of course. But I'm still able to step foot into a professional wrestling ring for a company that is the second largest company in America, will soon be the largest company in America. In my opinion, the best company in America, and do the thing that I love the most. Well, next to raising children and being a husband.
Exactly.
I absolutely love professional wrestling. I love performing. I love teaching. And I can't say anything but good things about my run here. Hopefully it gets better. I'm going to make sure it gets better. And before I'm done, you guys are going to see the real me.
So you started out, eventually kind of got into the wingman group, which is unique for you, for those that have seen you on the indies, different kind of character, and all that. Was that,
now let's say unique to say the least.
Yeah. Was that a challenge or just a different challenge? Not in a bad way, but like a challenge in how to kind of, it challenged you to kind of, how do you figure out this new character and is still you, but it's a different you and how you fit in with this group. What was that whole creative process like?
Who knows? I don't know what the creative process was. I know that
in your head,
Tony came to me and said, "Hey, Tony came to me and said, hey, you're going to be with Ryan Nemeth, and Nemeth is with Cesar Bononi, and they're with Peter Avalon. They're already a faction, so we're going to put you with them because it's polar opposites, and we want to see if it works." I was like, "Well, I'll make it work." So that became the tagline. Every time that we cut a promo, they would give me something, like they'd give me some sort of stupid shirt or some kind of dumb hat or anything like that. And they'd be like, "This will never work." And I would stop them and tell them, "I'll make it work." And I always made it work. So that was the thought process behind all of it. I was like, I'm going all in. I'm going to make sure that if I'm doing this, I'm having the most fun that I can. And I'm going to make people remember that while I was a part of this group, I made stuff work that wasn't supposed to. Then when we went to the Jericho Cruise, that was the most fun that I think we've ever had, because that gimmick was spot on for the cruise.
Yep.
We were in every, we was in just about every match on the boat in some way, shape or form. We were all over the place, almost always in character, always hanging out. And for me, it was completely different because for the most part, I've always been hard-nosed, serious, blue-collar badass, just in your face. That's the type of style that I run. So now I got to tap into the old school, like Southern flamboyant heel type stuff where I didn't mind looking like a goof because that's what was asked of me. And I feel like that I can wrestle that. I was trained by George South.
Yeah.
You telling me George South can't do that? George can do anything. So he prepares you to do anything. He always tells you, do what's asked of you. You'll always have a job. So
good advice.
I just did what was asked of me. And it's turned into 2 years so far. And I hope it turns into 20 more.
I was excited when Anthony Henry started working in AEW because, you know, we started as a singles and I would say on the Limitless Wrestling podcast, I actually do with Randy Carver, who you know pretty well, that I'm like, I hope these guys get together because I've seen it. One of my favorite matches I've ever seen live is you against Main State Posse in the Portland Club, the first of your best of three. I would tell people seek that on YouTube. That was such a great environment. That was my first time seeing you live. And I was like, this is unreal. I hope that you guys do get your run. My dream would be to see you and FTR have 15 to 18 minutes. I think that would be.
That's ours too.
Unbridled awesomeness.
That's ours too. That is our dream match. We want it bad.
Yeah.
Like North Carolina wrestling will blow up.
Yep. Yep. And so
just
someday. Someday it'll happen.
What's happening?
Yeah. So I want to go back. So he gets signed by WWE. You're back as a singles wrestler. He then gets released. How soon after that did you guys talk about getting together again? And for your perspective or his, was there any like hesitancy of kind of going back to something familiar and like, I don't want to do kind of play the hits again? Or were you guys like, no, we got to get do this. It's just a question of when and where.
He was ready to quit. He was ready to quit. Like, he had made it, and he was doing well, and then all of a sudden it got pulled out from under him. And, man, the conversations I had with him. I was like, look, man, you're too good. There's no way. I'm not going to allow you to just quit. So whatever I got to do to get your ass back in a professional wrestling ring, I mean, take your time. Take your time. You need your time. We talked about mental health. He and I confide in each other a lot on the road. Told him, whatever you got to do for you, you do for you. But when you're ready, we'll start taking tag bookings again. And we're going to remind people who we are. And it wasn't just go in and do our greatest hits. It was go in and make our greatest hits better. So we were good before he went to WWE, but when he got back, I felt like we had something to prove. And we've had some really, really good matches since he's been back. Mm-hmm. And when he first showed up at AEW to work some of the Dark tapings, when I walked in, I was excited. I was as excited as anybody. Like, not only is my best friend here, I get to watch my best friend wrestle, who I feel like is one of the top 10 wrestlers on the planet. And if you guys, like, anybody who says otherwise has never seen him really go. Anthony is unreal. Like, unreal. There's nobody on the planet he can't keep up with. You put him in the ring with Bryan Danielson for 15 minutes, and I promise you he will blow your mind.
Agreed. Promise. Yep. Yep.
But he's a special type of human, man. He is. Because at some points it's, you know what? What are we doing? Why are we spinning our wheels? And then the very next day it's, hey, we need to stop spinning our wheels and keep going and get these bookings and get that booking. And we need to go whoop these people's ass and we need to go remind the fans who we are. Then the next day, both of us at the same time. You think anybody really cares? It was that way for 6 months. Mm. And then finally, we had a conversation. I told him, hey, bud, we're either going to do this or we're not. We're doing it.
Yep.
So we're here. Y'all ain't going to run us off.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to more stuff in the AEW. Want to wrap up with a couple questions about the indies. Busy. You're busy. So you average about, other than the pandemic year, you know, past few years, about 70, 75 matches a year, give or take. You're right around about 60. Yeah. Right around 60 right now on average. So on pace to hit that again. How do you decide when and where that you want to work? How does that play in your mind in terms of scheduling and all that?
Well, I get to where I have to schedule days off now. So I'm trying to schedule it around here. Mm-hmm. Like, just in case they need me here for anything. But I have a lot of companies that I've worked for years. Like, Limitless is I've worked there since, what, 2017, 2018?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I've always enjoyed it up there. So anytime they run and I'm available, that's where I'm going to go. If it's companies that I worked for as I was coming up and they're wanting to bring me in, I'm fine with it. New companies some of them kind of worry me because, you know, there's new companies popping up all over the place, just all the time. Garden State has been a good one. If you've got some sort of buzz and I know about you already, then we're good. West Coast Pro was probably one of the most fun shows that I've worked in a long time. That locker room is fantastic. The promoters there treated me like gold. That's really all it takes. If you treat me well and you treat me like a human and you don't just bring me in and like just, oh, well, this is where you're going to stay. This is what you're going to do. Whatever. If you communicate with me and treat me like a human, I'm okay. But if you bring me in and just treat me like, you know, circus animal, nah, man, I'm not all about that. Or if you treat the rest of your guys that way. Most of the places I work now are places where they treat their talent with respect and they treat their talent like very well. Yeah. So that's one of the prerequisites. There's a company here at home, AML. I'm about to start working for them some. DPW here in North Carolina might be the next big thing on the indies. Keep your eyes open for them.
DPW. Okay.
But, DPW, Deadlock Pro Wrestling. But what it boils down to is I want to work where I'm treated well, where the boys and girls are treated well, where the athletes are treated well. That's for all of my non-binary gender fluid friends. If you're a human that puts on professional wrestling gear, go out and you put your life on the line for a company, they deserve to treat you well, period. If they don't go. There's plenty of places. I could sit here for hours talking about the places that you don't need to go. But I learned the hard way. Y'all are more than welcome to. You shouldn't take but once. But what it boils down to is, if it's not improving my stance at the company that I want to work for the rest of my life, which is All Elite Wrestling, then I'm not sure that I want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So quality over quantity.
Makes sense. I've wanted to ask you this question forever about travel. So there's a story. So we hear about delays all the time. We don't hear about the flights that get made. And you made a flight. So September 2021, JD.
Oh, God.
You and Anthony, yeah. You worked for Limitless Wrestling in Yarmouth, uh-huh. Maine on a Saturday night. You flew all the way across the country the next day to work against AJ Gray for PWG in Los Angeles. So for people that don't have a map, that's about, you can't get a further trip than that. How, and it's not, I guess it's not the first time you've done that. How did you do it?
Well, the good thing is there's a 3-hour difference between one side of the country and the other.
Yeah.
So when you get done in Maine and you get up the next morning and you jump on a plane at 6 a.m., it's 3 a.m. in California. So it's a 5-hour flight over there. You're landing about 8 a.m. So it's not like we had to get off the plane, go straight to the venue. No. We got to go to our room, go to sleep, or I got to go to my room, go to sleep, chill out, and recover enough to be able to get in the ring and wrestle AJ. Now, there have been times. Me and Anthony worked a show in North Carolina. We jumped on a plane. We were flying to California, but we got delayed.
Oh, no.
And we landed in Denver, Colorado to meet our connection to go to California. Well, when we got to Denver, our delay caused us to miss our flight to go to L.A. Like, we literally walked up to the gate as the plane was leaving.
Oh, man.
Looked at each other and said, what the hell do we do? So we go to the damn customer service desk and they say, the closest we can get you is Santa Ana, California. So we message the promoter, hey, we can get to Santa Ana by 6:45. The show starts at 8. It's an hour drive from Santa Ana to Los Angeles. So we land in Santa Ana at 7 o'clock. So delayed us another 15 minutes. We get there and the promoter says, I've paid for an Uber. Just get in the Uber and come on. It was a $125 Uber from Santa Ana to Los Angeles. It's for Maverick Pro. We get there. We walk in. Luckily, we're wrestling guys that we wrestled over here in the Carolinas a bunch. We wrestled the Gymnasty Boys. And we walked in. We just looked at the guys. We said, hey, we've done this dance a bunch. Let's just go have fun. We go out. We wrestle. We're back in the locker room by 9:30 p.m. We're on a plane by 11 p.m. and on our way back home. We were literally in California less than 5 hours.
Unbelievable.
It was the wildest thing ever. And when we got back home, we had a booking that we were supposed to go to, but it got canceled.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have wanted to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's travel is wild sometimes. Sometimes it's the best thing ever. Sometimes it's wild. Mm-hmm. But it's no different than jumping in a car in North Carolina at like 2 a.m, driving 10 and a half hours to Chicago to drive 10 and a half hours back to North Carolina the next morning, to drive 4 hours to a local booking, to drive home to sleep, to drive another 5 hours to another local booking the next day. That's the real hustle. And the ones that get in the car and do that every weekend, I commend you.
Yeah.
My body won't let me do it no more. I absolutely cannot do it anymore. But to the young guys and even some of the vets that jump in the car and they make the 12, 14-hour rides, you deserve a lot more than you're getting.
I agree. One other thing about the indies. So you mentioned bookings. One thing we hear about from indie wrestlers or people that work the indies, rather, is that tough conversation of when you can't make a booking. I know you pride yourself on not missing dates. You mentioned Twitter.
I try my best not to.
That's right. You mentioned you've had a handful of bookings through your 20 plus years or so that due to injury couldn't make it. Recently you had to miss one, you mentioned, due to a left knee injury and also broken nose. And another one was on relative short notice because you got called to be on Death Before Dishonor. You had to cancel a couple days ahead of time. That has to be tough for you and for others because essentially you kind of have like two bosses, right? You mentioned you have AEW, who you really kind of, I guess, your primary, but you also work so many dates for all these different bosses outside. That has to be hard, especially for someone like you that cares so much. And I can tell you, you're a big relationship person and the respect level and all those things. That's going to be hard to make that call and be like, I can't make it. What is that conversation like?
It sucks. It sucks. But like, it's easier now because if I get called by AEW, Ring of Honor, this is my job. This is what pays the rent. This is what puts food on the table. This is what puts clothes on my kids' backs. This is going to be here. I've signed the paperwork. I have a commitment. If they call me last minute and they say, hey, we absolutely need you. We need you to cancel a booking to be here. If my main boss tells me to, then I don't have much of a choice.
Right.
You know? When it comes to the injury standpoint, I can't count the shows that I've worked injured just to be able to make a booking. The older that I've gotten, the more I realize that if I show up injured and make this date and I take your booking fee and I give you less than what you paid for in the first place, I'm robbing you. I'm not giving you what you paid for. You paid for me to go in and be at my best. Well, if I show up and my left knee is blown out and I still try to go out there and work, that's not what you paid for. Mm-hmm. The night you're talking about, I wrestled Friday night. I wrestled at Garden State. Me and Anthony wrestled the Kingdom. And I hit a moonsault, bashed my left. Was it my left? It was my left. Bashed my left knee into the mat to the point to where I couldn't walk by the end of the night. It swelled up so bad, I just couldn't walk. Then, the next day, as I'm walking to my car, I looked at my fiance or wife, whatever you want to call her. We've been engaged for 8 years now, so there's no reason we shouldn't be married. I looked at her and said, "Yo, my knee feels pretty good. I think I can go make this flight." We stopped to get something to drink, and I take a step out of the car. It buckles.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going. I'm not. There's no way. She's like, "Nope, you're canceling this booking. He can get mad if he wants to." The next week, I was okay. But I wrestled Saturday night, not really hurt, but not really comfortable.
Yeah.
That's when I wrestled Violence Is Forever, and we went out, and those boys,
they hit.
They're very good.
Yeah.
They took the best care of me. But I went out and gave them everything I had for 20 plus minutes. And like, I've done that so many times in my career that it just felt like part of the job. But like I said, the older I get, the more I realize if I go out there and I work hurt and I give you less than 100% of me, then, you know, it would be like buying a new car and only getting three tires.
Right.
So while it's still hard because I like to uphold my commitments because my word is all I have in professional wrestling. Sometimes I just can't.
Yeah.
And like I said before, I can count in 20 years, I can count on two hands the amount of bookings I've had to cancel.
It's a good track record. You work a lot of dates. That's good. That's good.
It sucks. It sucks having to say, man, I just can't make it. It just sucks. Unless it's circumstances beyond my control. Like if a flight gets canceled and I can't make it, that's one thing. If it's something that's my fault, that's another.
Yeah. A couple other quick hitters as we wrap up here. Did you ever get that anger management training that the WWE personnel told you to get? You talked about that, the tryout and everything. You've told that story before. I was just curious if you ever got that or not. That whole story is quite something.
Jesus Christ. I never cussed the man. I don't get it. Like, it was one of those things where it was like, you cussed out head of talent relations. We want you to coach, but you're going to need like anger management training. I never cussed him. Hell, I thought I cut a pretty good promo on the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was as nice and polite and passionate as I could be, but what do you expect? You just told a man who's been looking at this dream since he was 5 years old that he's not fit to compete in your company because his knee is trash, when you had no less than 7 people there who had either didn't have a left knee since they were 16 years old or wearing braces on television to do the support that their ligaments can't, or have recently blown out their knee, or every time they look at a professional wrestler, they blow out their knee. And I've wrestled with your talent for the last 3 years on a ball. Yeah, I was hot.
Yeah.
But no, I did not get the anger management training. All I did was send an email to a different company.
That's right. And the story I'm referring to, of course, is a June podcast with Muscle Man Malcolm. You talked about this WWE tryout you did.
Yes.
And then shortly after that, yeah, you sent the email to AEW, and then they contact you and, again, give you a couple days notice. And look at that. Almost 2 years later, here you are. Worked out good.
Yes, sir. That was the same tryout that Anthony was at.
Oh, okay. No kidding. Nice. That's great. One other question before we get some plugs. Recently, you took some umbrage with Josh Briggs' moveset after with Booker T was saying he's never seen offense like that.
Good day. Here we go. Listen.
Let's see what you got.
All right. Listen, Internet. I am not upset that Josh Briggs did a move that he's seen me do a million times in the same company that we worked for together. It actually made me smile. When he did it, there was lighthearted joking. Hey, Josh, at least let him know where you got it from. Mm-hmm. Let me give you another instance. The move that Angelo Dawkins does, the silencer, that's mine. I created that one. Oh, okay. I will go to my grave saying I created that one. 2002, I hit it in training on a guy that I consider to be one of my best friends of my entire life. He wrestled under the name Marshall Simmons. You'll not know him unless he was on the North Carolina indie scene. But I hit it in training. That was my finish for 20 years. 20 years. I used to start it in a cradle versus going straight from the ground. I don't get mad when people use my stuff. I don't. Joe Gacy did the same spot in NXT. If you don't believe me, go back and look it up. I will try my best to go find it and post a clip if I have to. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It was a little lighthearted joking. That's all it was. It did stir a pot and piss off some damn fans or in the internet wrestling community, which is always fun. But it looked good. Hell, I can't be upset about it. He popped somebody up into the ropes and clothesline their head off. That's what you're supposed to do. Good job. Mine is a forearm shiver. When you pop them up into the ropes, I don't hit a clothesline. I punch them in the face or I hit them with my forearm in the face. I have footage of me hitting this move in 2015 and literally looked at the guy before the match and said, hey, if you charge me on the floor and I've got my back to the apron, I can pop you up into the ropes and punch you on the way down. He said, man, that sounds like a cool spot. Let's do it. We did it, and it's been a staple of my moveset since 2015. That's 7 years. Pretty good long time. But no. Quit trying to make something out of nothing, internet wrestling community. Nobody was mad. Dirt sheets, too.
Those damn dirt sheets. Are you sure you didn't take the silencer?
I swear to goodness.
Are you sure you didn't take the silencer from Vern Gagne? I thought you said he did that in a match with Nick Bockwinkel. I have to go view it, Dave. So I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know?
maybe. Yeah. Might have gotten... Might have gotten it from Hackenschmidt. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. Gotch or something like that. That's right. all right, so before we get you out of here, we're recording this on Thursday. You're working. You're in Jacksonville right now, so you're going to be obviously a part of the Friday, I'd assume, dark tapings before
probably
for Rampage and everything. And then any other indie dates do you have? Anything else coming up this weekend? Or I know you have Limitless coming up
this weekend. I actually have a weekend off.
Look at you.
The 29th, I have Limitless.
Yes. You and Anthony. Yes.
Yes, sir. We're beating the hell out of Shook Crew.
That's right.
Then the following weekend I have off because that is the lady's birthday. Do not try to book me unless it's the main boss, and then I have no choice. The 12th, I have DPW in Concord. That's November 12th, Concord, North Carolina, Deadlock Pro Wrestling. That's going to be a good one. But as far as dates for AEW, I'm hoping that I can get some more today or tomorrow when I get to the venue. I'm always on call. All they got to do is make a telephone call. I will show up and chop people into oblivion and go about my business.
That's right. And people can get you on Cameo. They can do that now, correct?
They can find me on Cameo. Just search JD Drake. Not hard to find. Yep. Twitter, @RealJDDrake. I have a backup account that I only use when people decide to hack me and be stupid, but we're not doing that anymore. You can find me on Facebook, James D. Drake. Instagram, Real James Drake. I'm on TikTok, @RealJDDrake. You'll see a lot of bowling content on there. what other social medias can you find me on?
Well, buying your merch.
That's about it.
Yeah, PWTs or anything like
I do have a PWT store. Search JD Drake or James Drake. It'll pop up. I'll send you a link to it so that you can attach it along with this video if you'd like. Or you can just hit me up personally. I have some merch that Pro Wrestling Tees doesn't have.
Exclusives.
So, you can hit Anthony up for these sweet sweatshirts.
Yeah, JD, for those that are just listening, he's wearing a Work Horseman sweatshirt. So, yeah, good stuff there. And obviously, if yes. People are seeing you at indie shows, bring cash, right?
Bring cash. I have Square, Venmo, my Cash App, you name it. I can take anything.
Good stuff.
I'll find a way to get the payment, even if it's, hey, go buy me a beer or five.
And one of the few men I've seen is able to extend a intermission just by saying he's not leaving. He's still selling shit.
Absolutely. If I have a long ass line, Randy Corbin kiss my ass. I'm making my money. He's not paying me.
That's right.
Well, he is paying me or I wouldn't show up.
Well, I know we went over time, but I appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. I want to talk to you forever.
Yes, sir.
And I'm glad we're able to do this. I'm glad I didn't get called a goober smooch. That's one of your lines.
Gosh,
so thank
you. Well, it is, but it's not meant in any sort of derogatory fashion. It's just something that has been said in the South since I was five.
Exactly. Yeah. One of my favorite insults that I have written down here is when you said to a fan, you're what happens when the plan B pill fails.
He pissed me off, man. That was that goof.
Okay. Yeah.
That was that one that was like being a bigot and freaking being stupid and yelling slurs. I don't apologize for that. He is exactly what happens when the plan B pill fails. I swear to goodness, people like that shouldn't exist. I don't get it.
Good stuff. Well, JD Drake, best of luck, and look forward to talking to you in the months, years ahead. Who knows? Best of luck, and great
yes, sir.
Stuff. Yeah, thank you very much. All right, big thanks to JD Drake for stopping by. Originally supposed to go 30 minutes, but we actually went almost 60. And I'm glad we did, because there was a lot to get to there, and some interesting stuff. I had no idea about him, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He talked about his son and just kind of the insights about how he's trying to become more evolved and more open-minded in all this as well. I thought that was good, honest stuff as well. I was looking, we're taking it kind of behind the curtain here. We're starting to do these via Zoom, and I'm recording video. I'm not recording video, but I have the video on. I did the same thing with Ari Helwani last week, and I'm finding I actually like it. I'm kind of trying to get used to that a little bit more to see how open people are when the video is on, if it's very similar to the audio. And people seem to be, at least a couple times around, the conversations are still the same. So I don't know if this is eventually going to turn to a video podcast as well, but based on the past two that have gone well, that might be something I kind of open up with. So who knows? But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Again, if you want to hear more about the tryout stuff for WWE, he did a podcast in June with Muscle Man Malcolm. You can find that on YouTube, Speaking Video Podcast. It kind of goes into more details about that there. But yeah, that's something I want to do for a while. The travel stories are crazy. Just that life of an indie wrestler, I think, is one that I think we take for granted. And then you hear some of the details about this stuff, and it's wild, absolutely wild. So again, big thanks to Jay for stopping by. Thanks to all of you for the really positive feedback for the Ariel Helwani interview last week. Again, serendipitous, because this was planned well before he had made his comments about Tony Khan. And it seems like he was pretty happy with it. I did not get the retweet, unfortunately, which kind of would help boost things, but that's okay. The attention, it seemed to get a lot of attention, both from detractors and the positive people as well. So again, at least we're able to kind of bring that conversation forth. It was referenced on Wrestling Observer Radio. Of course, my name was not mentioned, so I remain anonymous, I guess, when it comes to that. But that's okay. People listen to it. The fans listen to it. And I greatly appreciate that. And yeah, greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast guests here on WrestlingObserver.com. Working on hopefully another good one for next week. We're on a little bit of a roll here. And yeah, we're going to keep it going. So until next time, insert catchphrase here.